The exact quote she offers us is the following. What is the point of rectifying him if the thing be unimportant? And if important, let it pass for the moment. It is wonderful how many persons are rendered unhappy by inattention to these little rules of prudence. So just look away. Ignore the problems around you. But certainly most troubling of all is his relationship with Sally Hemings and their children. Now, I read to you before a brief passage from Madison Hemings. I want to read more, because most of what we've looked at so far of Jefferson have been his own words or those of his admirers and friends. But I think it's important to bring the Hemings into the story, because they also are an important part of the Jeffersonian legacy. Well, he recounts the return of his mother, a mother who would have been freed had she stayed in Paris. Her enslavement under Jefferson's service and that of her brother while in France was in fact illegal. He mentions the name of his brothers and sisters, Beverly, Harriet, Madison, and myself, and Eston, three sons and one daughter. We all became free agreeably to the treaty entered into by our parents before we were born. We all married and have raised families. Nonetheless, during Jefferson's lifetime, they all remained enslaved, his own children. And that's made all the more striking by the fact that these children are at least 7/8 white. In fact, Beverly left Monticello and went to Washington as a white man. He married a white woman in Maryland, and their only child, a daughter, was not known by the white folks to have any colored blood coursing in her veins. Beverly's wife's family were people in good circumstances. Similarly, Harriet married a white man in good standing in Washington City, whose name I could give, but will not, for prudential reasons. She raised a family of children, and so far as I know, they were never suspected of being tainted with African blood in the community where she lived or lives. I have not heard from her for 10 years, and do not know whether she is dead or alive. As to myself, I was named Madison by the wife of James Madison, who was afterwards President of the United States. Mrs. Madison happened to be at Monticello at the time of my birth and begged the privilege of naming me, promising my mother a fine present for the honor. She consented, and Mrs. Madison dubbed me by the name I now acknowledge. But like many promises of white folks to the slaves, she never gave my mother anything. I was born at my father's seat of Monticello in Albemarle County, Virginia, near Charlottesville, on the 19th day of January, 1805. And then he enters the recollections of his father. About his own home, he was the quietest of men. He was hardly ever known to get angry, though sometimes he was irritated when matters went wrong. But even then, he hardly ever allowed himself to be made unhappy any great length of time. And I think that's a very revealing statement. He doesn't allow himself to be unhappy. He doesn't allow himself to experience things which would trouble his stoic mind. He was uniformly kind to all about him. He was not in the habit of showing partiality or fatherly affection to us children. We were the only children of his by a slave woman. The next sentence, however, is a strong juxtaposition. He was affectionate towards his white grandchildren. My brothers, Sister Harriet, and myself were used alike. We were permitted to stay about the great house and only required to do such light work as going on errands. We were always permitted to be with our mother, who was well used. Provision was made in the will of our father that we should be free when we arrived at the age of 21. We had all passed that period when he died, but Eston, and he was given the remainder of his time shortly after. So, in fact, Jefferson didn't exactly keep his pledge to Sally Hemings. He did keep his children as his slaves throughout the rest of his life. And I think this is important because we can't just see the Hemings as abstractions. These are a Jeffersonian legacy every bit as much and every bit as important as the Declaration of Independence. And in fact, I think if we look at Jefferson's family life, and again, this is my own personal conviction, it may reveal a critical aspect of Jefferson's optimism and buoyancy, that it is in fact a tonic, a necessary tonic. Look at the tragic circumstances that surround him and the irrational bind history has placed him in. He is, in fact, a sensitive soul who's tormented by the realities of slavery, both in the abstract and in the real and concrete, under his own roof. Confidence in the future may be the only thing that keeps him sane, that keeps him from distraction, like whistling past the graveyard to overcome a frightening terror.